is your pride telling lies that, you're not on your own? Watching faith in prayers will make you see.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Molly Worthen, who's a professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She studies modern American intellectual life, particularly the history of evangelical Protestantism, and has an article in Sunday's New York Times, The Power of Political Communion. Welcome to Background Briefing, Molly Worthen.
Thank you.
And your article talks about the struggle, if you will, within the Catholic Church between what Vice President Joe Biden said at the Democratic National Convention, two different visions, two different sets of values, or as you put it, the tale of two Catholicisms. Now, the fact that you have the bishops essentially supporting the Republicans and the nuns supporting the Democrats, how different is that from the general lay of the land in American politics, where 60% of women vote Democrat and 60% of men vote Republican? In other words, the Democrats are the mommy party and the Republicans are the daddy party.
Well, I would say that the Catholic vote is a very complicated vote, and it's hard to generalize. But historically speaking, there was once a time, as late as the 1960s, when a Catholic American was much more likely to vote Democrat than Republican. And what I tried to write about in the article is the story of the alienation of many Catholic Americans from the Democratic Party, and the great tragedy of that, because there are so many theological ideas and there's a long intellectual tradition in Catholicism that very much supports and aligns with the Democratic platform of enhancing the social safety net and trying to guarantee a minimum level of physical security and dignity for all Americans.
Well, I guess the shift, as you point out in your article in Sunday's New York Times, The Power of Political Communion, Molly Worthen, is it started under Richard Nixon. I recall the hard hats joined with Nixon to condemn the anti-war demonstrators and beat a few heads, I remember. And then, of course, the Reagan Democrats were often working-class Catholic white males. How did the Republicans undo Jack Kennedy's base?
Well, they realized that there was this mass of working class, the term is often white ethnics, and that can be read often to mean a Catholic working class voters, perhaps the children of immigrants, who in the wake of the upheavals of the 1960s and 1970s felt that they had gotten a raw deal from America, that they were not achieving all they wanted to achieve, and in a political climate that had identified a number of categories of victims, be it black Americans or women, they had been left out. And on top of this, the Republicans capitalized on a backlash against the erosion of social mores and the social upheaval of the 60s and 70s. And on top of this, as the Democrats radicalized on the abortion issue, they lost interest in serious dialogue with those Christians, Catholic and evangelical, who perhaps had a great deal of sympathy for the Democratic social vision, but were not willing to grant that abortion ought to be legal, and that this was a fixed and closed conversation. And so there was both a radicalization on the part of the Democratic Party on this issue that is of core importance to many Catholics and Protestant evangelicals, as well as an increased savviness on the part of Republicans to really make a pitch to those religious voters who felt that they had been left out by elements of the Democratic message.
So, Molly Worthen, it would seem, though, that there's nowhere where you have greater concentration of conservative white Catholic men than on the Supreme Court. It's a pretty extraordinary situation, isn't it? Almost
yes.
The entire court is Catholic.
Yes, that's right. And some observers of the contemporary American political and intellectual scene commented that it almost seems as if Protestant evangelicals have outsourced much of their heavy-duty conservative intellectual thinking to Roman Catholics, and not least of which are those who are on the Supreme Court, who have so radically shifted our political culture in some of their recent decisions.
Again, I'm speaking with Molly Worthen, who's a professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She studies modern American intellectual life, particularly the history of evangelical Protestantism, and has an article in Sunday's New York Times, The Power of Political Communion. Now, you would think, though, with the changing demographics in this country, that the Democrats would have an opening here. This is the first time in history that we haven't had white Protestants running for president of the United States, an uninterrupted tradition now with a black incumbent, Barack Obama, and a Mormon challenger. You've got about 10 million young Hispanics who have not registered to vote. Eventually they will. How would they split in terms of whether they would take the Paul Ryan and Rand approach or the Sister Simone Campbell social gospel approach?
Well, the data I've seen suggests that they are tentatively turning toward the Democratic Party, and that tends to be where they are aligning. However, it's a complicated story. And on the one hand, some commentators have pointed out that all the Democratic Party needs to do is wait a few years, a few more elections, and the white men in America will by that point be so outnumbered by new immigrants of color who naturally vote Democrat that the future elections will be in the Democratic Party's pocket. I think, however, that is an overly rosy vision, especially if the Democratic Party fails to understand the importance of religion to many of these new immigrants who perhaps are not fitting into the category of the traditional white conservative evangelical, but who are Roman Catholic or who are Pentecostal. The Pentecostal community is enormous among Hispanic Americans, and for them, they are wrestling with the tensions between their desire to support the Democratic agenda on issues such as immigration and the social safety net, but on the other hand, they are very genuine concern about traditional understandings of social mores, the abortion issue. And so if the Democratic Party does not learn to be sensitive to the interests of these constituents and the importance of religion, then they should not be overly confident about their ability to win those votes.
Well, I'm sure you recall, Molly Worthen, from the Democratic Convention, the moment where Mayor Villaraigosa of Los Angeles was calling the vote on changing the platform to put God back in, and also the Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. And the A's had it, according to Villaraigosa, but there are an awful lot of strident no's coming from the audience there on the God issue. You're suggesting here that the liberal Catholics offer a path to secular Democrats who at the moment are failing to address the basic question of the human predicament. Elaborate on that.
Well, I'm suggesting that the liberal Catholics provide helpful interlocutors. They are conversation partners for secular Democrats who over the past couple of decades have become very alienated from religion in general. I think there is a hefty segment of the leadership of the Democratic Party that is in no small part because of the rising noise on the part of the religious right and the religious right's claim to sort of speak for all religious Americans, that they have become very uncomfortable with the presence of religion in the marketplace of American ideas generally and see it as a noxious force that quenches the freedom of individual conscience, that makes open public debate from commonly accepted assumptions impossible. And what I'm suggesting is that liberal Catholics, representing a population that has been a religious minority for a very long time, which cannot really be said of Protestant evangelicals who enjoyed a de facto establishment of their form of Christianity for most of American history up until probably about the 1970s. Liberal Catholics, on the other hand, have had to reason through the dilemma of being a religious minority among a, frankly, rather suspicious population that for much of Catholic history did not trust them, saw them as loyal only to Rome and not to American values. And therefore, they have become acutely and very intelligently sensitive to the compromises necessary to make a democracy work. And there is a tradition that Mario Cuomo called the American Catholic tradition of political realism that recognizes American democracy as an evolving conversation that needs to welcome people from religious perspectives, but can arrive at a working agreement, a consensus, that we need to continually revisit and talk about and argue about, but that provides some sort of common ground for living and arguing together as a community. And I see this liberal Catholic tradition as one that can be quite helpful to secular Democrats who are so leery of allowing people with a religious perspective into the conversation from the beginning. And I think, to take a practical example, the liberal Catholic discourse around the issue of abortion can perhaps help secular liberals reframe the way they make the case for legalized abortion to the American people. I mean, poll numbers keep coming back indicating that a small majority of Americans are leaning pro-life, and that is increasingly the trend. And my view is that the current line on abortion that you hear among secular Democrats, that we have to preserve Roe versus Wade as a bulwark against this war on women, is simply not resonating with the American electorate, for whom abortion is a deep moral tragedy. And they can learn to be more sensitive to the way in which most Americans think about this crucial issue, this issue that has so alienated secular and religious Americans from one another, by learning from those liberal Catholics in their own ranks who have had to come to terms with their party's support for Roe versus Wade on the one hand, and yet their own continuing personal opposition to abortion on the other.
Yeah, but also the majority of American Catholics practice contraception. And
that's right.
The conservative movement is trying to even outlaw contraception. Paul Ryan, the vice presidential candidate on the Republican side, is against contraception.
Well, I think that's a bit of a stalking horse. I think that is supposed to be a symbol, really, for attacking big government and defending what Ryan would call freedom of religion and his interpretation of the First Amendment against this secular, if not aggressively atheistic, Democratic Party. I don't think that behind closed doors, even Paul Ryan is under any illusions about what the poll numbers say about what Catholics and evangelical Protestants do in their own home. And certainly it's been the case for decades that both of those constituencies use contraception nearly as much, if not as much, as the population at large. But it's a very important symbolic battle over the relationship between the government and the individual and the place of religion in the public square.
But in practical terms, if you were to outlaw contraception, you would have more abortions.
I think that's not an unfair conclusion, right? And that's perhaps not one that he's wrestled with explicitly. But again, I see it as part of a broader rhetorical case that he's making that gets to very much what both parties are talking about when they talk about this election being a choice between two worldviews, two visions for the country. And Paul Ryan is trying to say that the Republicans stand for an America in which the government is in a very reduced role and the individual is free, and that freedom includes freedom to practice one's religious faith and impose one's religious faith on the public square in a very open and political way.
Well, just in closing, Molly Worthen, the religious right is clearly strident, powerful. They have a tremendous media outreach with televangelism and radio as well. So Why is the religious left so dormant and the religious right so strident in this country?
It's a great and somewhat baffling question. I think the first thing to remember is that we cannot forget the great accomplishments of the religious left over the past century and the incredible role that liberal Christians, evangelical and Catholic, played in the civil rights movement. But that aside, there are a few reasons why the religious left does seem much more muted in our political debate today. I think, in general, Protestant evangelical Americans have suffered a sort of collective amnesia. They have forgotten their long heritage stretching across the whole of the 19th century, at which time evangelical Protestantism was deeply allied with social reform movements, with the desire to improve the life of the community and their fellow man, and somehow help to usher in the kingdom of God on earth. And what happened is, at the end of the 19th and in the early 20th century, that desire to reform society became allied with a certain liberal, what conservative evangelicals would call modernist ideas about reading the Bible, believing in the theory of evolution, and otherwise demoting the authority of the Bible. And so it almost became tainted. The reformist zeal that was such a crucial component of evangelical identity in the 19th century became tainted as liberal. And that's a great misfortune. More recently, the religious right has galvanized around this backlash against the social upheaval of the 60s and 70s, has drawn on this deep reservoir of anti-communism. And on the other hand, the religious left, since I would say the end of the civil rights movement as an organized political force, has been on the defensive, has been searching for any kind of comparable political energy, and has become, I would say, divided within itself for the same reasons that the American liberal movement in general has been split over questions of identity politics, and perhaps for religious people on the left, a kind of failure of nerve because of their sensitivity to other groups' truth claims, this sense that you see much more on the religious left than the right, that we have to be sensitive to the demands of a modern multicultural society, and this prevents them, perhaps, from being quite as ideological, quite as black and white in the way that so well serves the religious right when it comes to, you know, designing slogans for the culture wars.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Molly Worthen.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Molly Worthen, who's a professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She studies modern American intellectual life, particularly the history of evangelical Protestantism, and has an article in Sunday's New York Times, The Power of Political Communion. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Quiet voice.